Good afternoon. It is 2 p.m. here in Muskegon, here at WVS 103.7 The Beat. And as we do it Fridays at 2 p.m., this is Community Focus. As you know, this program is hosted by my brother, Gregory T. Roberts, and myself. And Gregory T. is still recuperating, so continue to send your thoughts and prayers out to my brother. Let's get started with weather today on this Friday, the 12th of December. There's a 40% chance of snow, which we've already had that. Low 24, high of 32. Tomorrow, Saturday, low of 9. That's right, 9 degrees, high of 26. Sunday, low of 8, high of 22 degrees. On Monday, it'll be a little breezy, low of 21, high of 27. On Tuesday, we warm up just a tad, low of 25, high of 38. On Wednesday, low of 36, high of 40. And next Thursday, there will be a 70% chance of snow, a low of 16, high of 43. So maybe latter part of next week, a little bit of that ice and snow will start to melt. Before we get to our guest today, you all have hopefully gotten used to my five list. Not top five, not in particular order, but this week's five list. I was having this conversation with my wife. She didn't know my list for today, but how about five gifts to not get your spouse for Christmas? And this advice might be for any time. Number one, unless specifically requested, do not buy appliances. All right. Number two, don't buy a gift that you bought your ex. Never a good idea. All right. Number three, don't buy a gift that's actually for yourself. Number four, don't buy passive aggressive gifts. Things like gym memberships. For me, don't buy me hair grow cream. It doesn't work anyway. Hair dye, things like that. And number five, don't buy any gift. What did I write here? Don't buy any gift that says you don't know your spouse. If it's color they hate, scent they hate, don't do that. And I have a bonus today. If you buy one of those last minute gifts from the aisle at CVS, Walgreens, Rite Aid, everybody knows, and you're telling on yourself that you didn't plan. All right, so Christmas is 13 days away. Let's get out there. If you're planning to buy gifts, if you're a gift buyer, if you're supposed to be a gift buyer, let's get to it. All right, now, the real reason you all come to this program on Fridays, I hope, is the amazing guest and information we're able to provide. Today is no different. Will you join me in welcoming to the program today the Chief Executive Officer of Muskegon Family Care, Ms. Kathy Covington. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Good to have you here.
Thanks for the invite.
Now, it's our first time having you on the program.
Yes.
For folks that don't know, first, let's tell them what Muskegon Family Care is, and then tell folks a little bit about yourself.
Muskegon Family Care is a federally qualified community health center, mm-hmm. and so we provide medical services to the community.
Okay.
I am Kathy Covington. Okay. I have been in Muskegon all of my life.
Okay.
I'm born and raised here, and I'm just really honored to be in this role as CEO, to be able to give back to my community.
Okay. Now, how long have you been CEO?
It's been 1 year.
Okay. So anniversary time, right?
Yes.
Or evaluation time, depending on how things go.
Yes.
So let's talk a little bit about Muskegon Family Care, federally qualified health center. What does that mean? Maybe some people in the community don't know what services you provide.
Yeah, federally qualified health center means that the federal government allows the center to receive federal dollars to okay. run the program, mm-hmm. which is why it's so important and is vital to the community because it provides access
okay.
to health care.
Okay.
And so we receive a lot of federal funds.
Okay.
And with that comes federal and state regulations
okay.
That we have to adhere to.
Okay.
Yes.
So how do we look at that as opposed to, everybody knows hospitals and doctors. You provide some of those same services? Or
yes, we have providers. So we have MD, DO, and then mid-level providers. And then we also have dental. Okay. So we have five dentists currently staffed. Okay. We also provide pharmacy services.
Okay.
At the center. And then the biggest barrier is transportation. We also offer transportation. So patients is able to call and reserve a spot to be able to be picked up and then taken back to their home for their medical appointments.
Okay. So now are your clients, kind of what's the right term?
Patients.
Patients. Okay. Do they have to be from Muskegon County?
They have to be a patient of ours. Yes.
Okay. I mean, they have to come from Muskegon County? Or?
Yes.
Okay. And just rough number, how many do you have there at the center today?
How many patients?
Yeah.
14,000.
14,000.
14,000.
Okay. I think that number might surprise a lot of people.
Ah, okay. Yeah. Okay. We've lost some because of COVID.
Oh, okay.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. So we're trying to get them back into care.
Okay. So now is the idea is that it for uninsured, underinsured people, can anybody with insurance come there?
Yes, anyone, commercial, but if you don't have money and don't have any insurance, you still can seek services. We have a sliding fee, and that's part of one of the federal government's regulation is that we offer that. So it goes by your income and your household size, and it determines how much you would pay for a service.
Okay. So you've been CEO for a year now.
Yes.
Less, this is your annual evaluation. Yes. What do you feel were your accomplishments during your first year? And that wasn't an aha question. I just, you get a year, you kind of reflect.
Yes,
you know.
Yes. I think one of the biggest accomplishments is to be able to have a strong leadership team. And so we've been able to build that. And I think, you know, if you don't have a good team, it's hard to do the work. Mm-hmm. And so I would say that would be the biggest accomplishment.
What's the number of employees? I know you have, I should say, I know, I don't pretend nothing. How many employees do you have there and in those other services I think you contract?
155 employees.
Wow. You might be one of the largest employers, or the larger employers in Muskegon Heights.
Okay.
Okay. And 150 employees, that's a lot of people to keep track of.
Yes.
When you say your leadership team, who does that encompass?
So that encompasses obviously the CEO. Mm-hmm. Then there's a chief operating officer, chief financial officer, chief human resource officer, dental director, behavior health director, pharmacy director, and then we have a chief medical officer and a medical director.
Okay. And you all are overseen by a board?
Yes. Yes. Okay. We have a board of 12.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. So folks on that board, they're appointed, they're elected. How are they?
It's through an application process. They're usually vetted or have an interest, and so they apply. And if there's no conflict of interest, then the board will vote to decide to accept an individual to the board.
Yeah. So if it's a, you know, and then we know we have two of those clinics in our community. What's the mission of Muskegon Family Care?
The mission of Muskegon Family Care is to ensure that individuals in the community have access to health care. And that's the same mission that the other federally qualified health center have. And so the community is lacking so many individuals that's willing to come into the clinic to receive care. And it's so needed. I mean, especially when you're dealing with blood pressure issue, cholesterol issues, that's commonly known for the Muskegon area. So it's important that they come and seek care.
Is it frustrating when you're out and about, you're from this community, and you know, we hear conversations, people, you know, you hear people say things like, I don't have a doctor, or I got this, but you know, doctor told me this, but I'm not doing that. When you hear those kind of things, when you tell people, come into the center, let's see if we can help you.
Yes.
Do you find yourself doing that a lot, or?
Yes, more and more, right? Because you want to, and you want them to feel comfortable. Because if you don't feel comfortable, I mean, that's very personal and close to you. So just trying to get them like comfortable or like relaxed about it, it's intimidating to come through the door, which is why I was grateful that we were able to partner with Michigan Department of Health and Human Services to mm-hmm. occupy some space at the Christ Temple Church.
Yes.
It's considered the neighborhood wellness center, so we have okay. staff there 3 days a week. Okay. And so in hopes of people in the community, they may not want to come through the doors at Muskegon mm-hmm. Family Care.
Okay.
But then they can go there and have some initial screening to get blood pressure check or cholesterol, okay. A1C.
Yeah, part of that mission, again, you kind of touched on some areas, and especially here in West Michigan, diabetes, kidney disease that are really high, especially in the African American community. What part of outreach? What part of that? How much of that do you do, and what are some of the things you do in terms of letting people know, hey, we're here, and there's some issues you ought to make sure you pay attention to in this community?
Well, today is one of those steps, right?
Okay.
But we also utilize WZZM.
Mm-hmm.
We utilize MLive, and then we also have a community coordinator, Kenitha Collins,
okay.
who also advocates and put on different events to encourage the community to seek our services.
Okay.
And so that's how we get the word out.
Okay. Now, I think you were very humble in your introduction, but you have a background in public health.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, so I spent 37 years at Ottawa County.
Mm-hmm.
I ended my career as the assistant director of operation of the Friend of the Court.
Mm-hmm.
And so there I assisted in helping families navigate the court system
mm-hmm.
And supervising staff that provided support to all of our investigators who were mm-hmm. Taking cases before the court.
Okay. So you get to a place like Muskegon Family Care. What are some of the misconceptions that you've come across that people have about a center like that?
Misconception? That's a good question.
Maybe they don't say it to you.
Well, you tell me what the misconception. What are the misconceptions? I don't know. What are they?
Yeah. Well, I don't want to put words to people. Well,
personally,
I think sometimes people have an assumption that's where poor people go, and they don't want to go there.
Yeah.
Or, and let me disclose, I've been a patient at a dental clinic for almost 2 decades.
Okay.
But okay. I think sometimes, there's the perception that you don't get quality care.
Yeah.
Anytime we provide a service that's publicly provided, mm-hmm. people have this assumption that it's going to be lesser care.
I think I'm
being fair in saying that there's people have that perception sometimes.
Okay.
No, maybe you don't hear it, but I think it's fair to say that's a perception people have.
Okay. I can clear that because sure. So when we talk about a federally qualified health center,
mm-hmm.
we are bound by hiring competent providers, mm-hmm. whether it's competent dentists
sure.
or providers.
Yeah.
We have to follow the rules. I mean, they cover our liability,
sure.
right? And so mm-hmm. when we interview for those positions, we make sure that we are getting experienced providers
mm-hmm.
And that they have proper oversight.
Yeah.
And so I can see how people would conceive Muskegon Family Care as for poor people because we yeah. predominantly have Medicaid and Medicare.
Yeah.
But we also have so many patients that have commercial insurance, right?
Yeah.
We have some great providers there. And I think, it's unfortunate that that's a perception, right? Because they yeah. are, and they really have the passion for doing the work. If you're not passionate about it, you're not going to feel comfortable with your provider, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so they really put a lot of effort into trying to be more accommodating, listening more, trying to better understand it, then establish that relationship with the patient to keep them coming back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, again, dealing with their perception, again, I hope I didn't offend you with that, but, if you're a doctor, you went to medical school, you passed your board, doctors, you're qualified.
Sure.
So it doesn't matter whether you're going to private or Muskegon Family Care, those same requirements are there.
Yes, yes,
and so
absolutely.
I think sometimes, again, people maybe yeah. have those misconceptions. And then you point out, you got a wide range of patients that come in different insurance areas. So I'll leave that area alone.
No, that's good. I'm glad you shared that.
Yeah,
yeah. So I could clear that up because, yeah. yes, we have quality providers there.
There's mm-hmm.
even behavior health therapists. I mean, they have mm-hmm. to follow the same certification yeah. as if they're in private practice.
Mm-hmm.
And so they just, a lot of them really want to give back to the community. And so they come there. They know they probably mm-hmm. don't earn what they could potentially earn if they mm-hmm. were to go into private practice, but they want to come and give back.
Yeah. Do you all anticipate, you know, a lot of talk about, you know we had the federal shutdown for over a month. Going to see increases in folks' health insurance subsidy for a lot of folks. Has any of this affected you all, or any changes you anticipate from some of these federal changes that might happen in the next couple of weeks?
Yes, but it was a touch and go for day in and day out. You know, it mm-hmm. was constantly changing. I am concerned about potential cuts with the Medicaid and mm-hmm. Medicare, because what's going to happen is that there's going to be so many more additional barriers that individuals will have to jump through to be able to maintain their health coverage, right? Mm-hmm. And so what we are attempting to do is to be able to have some available staff that's able to help these people either mm-hmm. recertify mm-hmm. And or to apply.
Yeah.
For mm-hmm. medical, because that's a barrier. Because if it's cumbersome, they're just gonna say forget it. And then they're not gonna seek care. They're not mm-hmm. gonna get regular blood pressure checks. They're not gonna get cholesterol checked. And as we all know, early detection is the best, right?
Sure. Yes.
And so if we can help navigate that, and plus we also have community health workers. We mm-hmm. have about four.
Okay.
That provide that direct one-on-one, almost like just trying to help them navigate whatever hurdle that they have to be mm-hmm. able to make sure that they get what they need.
Okay. Folks, we're on the air today and having a conversation with Kathy Covington, CEO of Muskegon Family Care, located at 2201
South Getty.
2201 South Getty in Muskegon mm-hmm. Heights.
Yes.
If you aren't aware of the facility, a good chance to stop by. You get a chance to listen to the CEO today. You know, I've had a number of folks from West Michigan, all kind of fields, come on and talk about healthcare. And again, we like the idea of educating the community. You've been in a position of has there been anything about being in a position that's really surprised you? Like, gee, I didn't really expect this.
No, I can't say I've had any aha moment.
Mm-hmm.
No, yeah. What I have learned is how many individuals are not seeking services.
Yeah.
I mean, we may have a person who was in the ER come in for a follow-up visit with a primary care provider, but come to find out they haven't had services in 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
That is what it was like. Wow. You would think that people would keep up on their regular checkup annually, mm-hmm. but that's not happening.
Yeah,
it's not happening.
We've talked with people from Skin Family Care, Hackett Community Care, and again, we get specialists on from Trinity, from all these places, and the idea that when there's something wrong, people don't do anything is still kind of surprising. Because everybody that you talk to in the healthcare feels like, let's come in and we'll figure something out.
We'll figure something out.
Yeah.
But
again, just that idea of folks like, do something. If you think something wrong, do something. Show up somewhere.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
It's disappointing. And again, we've talked about in West Michigan some particular areas of concern.
Which is why I was really happy to be able to partner, to be able to have some presence at mm-hmm. Christ Temple Church.
Yeah.
Because it's less intimidating mm-hmm. to be able to walk in and just say, hey, just check my blood pressure, right? And then hopefully you come back tomorrow and say, check my blood pressure again. Well, you're establishing a relationship with that person at Christ Temple, right? It's our mm-hmm. staff, right?
Sure.
And so over time, that maybe they will convince them to walk into the doors of our clinic mm-hmm. to be able to see a primary care provider.
Or just finding some creative ways to reach out to people.
Yes. Meet people where they're at.
Yeah, that's good, and I hope that that's good for you all and good for folks who are looking for care. Now, you have another event coming up this week, correct?
Yes, we have an event tomorrow. Muskegon Family Care is hosting a holiday community dinner.
Okay.
That was organized by Kanitha Collins. It is tomorrow. It will be on at 2201 South Getty.
Mm-hmm.
It will be in our wellness center.
Okay.
And I think a lot of folks have already been at our wellness center, so they should come out. It's going to be some good food, some fun. You need to always put an extra twist in there to make it fun, right?
Okay, yeah.
Be some fellowship and more. So please, please come out. That's the effort that we want to be able to give back to the community, especially during the holiday season.
And that's tomorrow, the 13th?
Tomorrow, December 13th.
And what are the hours?
12 p.m. until 3 p.m.
12 to 3, and that is absolutely free.
Absolutely free.
We can all afford that. Yeah. Aside from the, you know, the financial challenges with cuts, vision for the next year, next couple of years, any particular things on the drawing board on the horizon for you all there?
Yeah, so we've always on the radar to make sure that we try to get out there a little bit more. We need to broaden our focus to be able to make an attempt to get individuals into care.
Yeah.
One of the things that we noticed that that we lost a lot of patients during COVID, and so doing some extra outreach in that area to draw in more patients.
Did people go to the places or they just stop going for healthcare?
I believe some went to other places, but there's a large number based on some audit trails that we've received, some data that we've received back, that they don't seek care at all.
Wow.
Now, we have to drill that down. That's one of those initiatives we're going to do into the new year, to drill it down to see, is it because of lack of transportation or is there other barriers that maybe we are not focused on or unaware of.
Okay. Is that local or was that a trend in healthcare clinics overall?
I don't know. I guess I could just speak to Muskegon Family Care.
Okay.
I'm not sure if I'm assuming others have.
Yeah. I just want to wonder about that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Folks, well, they did it at church too. So.
Yeah.
Y'all come back.
Yeah. Come back to church. Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. The world changed with COVID. Didn't
Yeah.
So looking at kind of do some analysis and find out where folks are and what's happened to them since then.
Yeah, because our job is to try to figure out how do we get individuals in care, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so the only way you can do that is to be able to create programming around eliminating some of those barriers, which is why Muskegon Family Care invested in transportation, vehicles for transportation, because that was a barrier.
And I was going to ask you about that. So how does the transportation work?
So they just make a call, 739-9315, say they want to schedule a pickup for an appointment.
Mm-hmm.
They'll send you over to the appropriate person to schedule that appointment.
Mm-hmm.
We have staff that drives, pick them up, and then they wait around for them and then take them back to their home or wherever they're living.
Okay. And pharmacy, do you have to be a patient at Muskegon Family Care to use the pharmacy there?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. You have to be a patient at Muskegon
Family Care. All right. Good. And what are the hours of the pharmacy?
The pharmacy has the same hours, except on Saturday they are open until noon, 8 until noon on Saturday. They also have delivery.
Oh, well, okay.
Pharmacy has delivery.
Okay.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Is that during those same hours?
Well, it started during COVID.
Oh,
right.
Okay.
And it's
okay.
Like people just really value having that. Right. And
yes,
so it
yes.
has increased since then.
Okay.
Yeah. So there's some positive things that came out of COVID.
I wouldn't worry, but that'll be we're not going back. So once you get delivered, you don't want to stop.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's been a benefit to our patients.
You mentioned, or maybe it was in my head, mental health side of things. Behavioral health.
Yes,
Is that area increasing? I know this area a lot of times people are hesitant.
Mm-hmm.
Are we doing a better job of letting people know it's okay to get help in those areas also?
Yeah, so when I was talking earlier about building the team, so we have an excellent behavioral health director, and she is really, really touching base with all of these community agencies, right, and identifying where the gaps are and where can we step in to help, even down to youth, bit to the Boys and Girls Club.
Okay.
Pathfinders and other agency, is rampant. I would say behavioral health, they've really done an excellent job to advocate to make sure people are aware that they are there.
Okay.
They've even started some youth group Okay. groups at Muskegon Family Care, and so they're going to be ramping that up. So they really are putting in the effort to advertise to make sure that the community is aware of the services we provide.
Okay. Let's just say a donor walked to you and said, I got this big check, Kathy, I want to give Muskegon Family Care. And you cannot dream big. What are some of the things you'd love to see you all be able to do?
I would like for us to be able to have a mobile unit.
Oh, okay.
You know, when you talk about meeting people where they're at, right? Yes. And so when I think of a mobile unit, you go out into the community in hopes that they'll come. If you go park in a specific area, that they'll come, get a blood pressure check. We'll have a provider there, some clinical support there to help them.
Awesome.
Yeah, to take it out to the community. There again, it's less intimidating.
Well, we put that out in the atmosphere and you never know. Somebody sitting there with a check. Well, people don't have checkbooks anymore. Sitting there thinking, I need to make a donation.
Yeah, we'll be glad to
take it. However it comes, right?
I mean, even the providers, I mean, they would be gung-ho, ready to go.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Kathy, it's been a pleasure sitting here with you. Anything
likewise
concerning Muskegon Family Care that I didn't ask you, I want to make sure we get out there to the public in the time we have here?
No, I just want to make sure that individuals realize, even if you have if you don't have the ability to pay, please come in, seek one of our employees that can help you complete the application for the sliding fee. Mm-hmm. And then we also have a Bency fund. Employees donate to that through their payroll deduction.
Okay.
And so like a doctor could advocate for one of their patients who has severe diabetes and can't afford the medication based on whatever kind of insurance that they have.
Mm-hmm.
They can make a request to the MITZI fund, and there's a committee who evaluate each request, and then they may be able to offer the medicine that you can't afford for maybe $5 because the MITZI fund kicked in.
Awesome.
So you... There again, another donor want to give out another check. We could just add to the MITZI fund too. Pharmacy uses it all the time because a lot of times people, you know, the cost of prescriptions are crazy expensive, right?
Yeah. It's kind of cool the employees are already going to be
investing in
what they do.
Yes.
That's awesome. Well, it's been a pleasure talking with you. I love these kind of interviews where we're really giving important information to our community, and they can put a face to the institution. So, folks, it's Muskegon Family Care, 2201 South Getty Street. If you don't want to do it, just say, hey, I saw Miss Kathy on the radio and I need some help, and she told me to show up here.
There you go.
And they will get you to the right place.
Absolutely.
All right. Thank you so much for joining us. Enjoy your holidays.
Thanks for having me.
All right. We're going to take a little break and we'll be back with our next guest. Good afternoon and welcome back to Community Focus. I want to bring our next guest up, and I'm going to do my best at getting their names correct. Will you join me in welcome to the program, Mark Krolianchik and Chris Dorch?
Good afternoon.
How did I do?
Perfect. That was
good. Because otherwise, you're going to be Mark and Chris from the rest of the program, so I don't mess it up.
That's totally fine.
Thank you guys for joining us so much. So we're here in Muskegon, and we have been seeing these advertisements, Cold Water Kitchen. Tell folks what the Cold Water Kitchen is.
Yes, sir. Yeah. So Cold Water Kitchen is a feature length documentary film about a Muskegon native, actually. Chef Jimmy Lee Hill, who's a native of Muskegon Heights.
Mm-hmm.
He about 40 years ago started a culinary program inside a Michigan prison.
Okay.
And I used to be a restaurant critic for the Detroit Free Press.
Okay.
And while I was, I was just kind of doing my restaurant critic thing, I got a letter from somebody at Lakeland Correction Facility.
Uh-huh.
And it basically said, I'm the sous chef in this culinary program. I think what we're doing is pretty amazing and you should come check it out. And eventually I did. And when I stepped into that place, I was blown away because we're going into level two prison.
Mm-hmm.
And meanwhile, I walk into this place and it's smelling good. There's jazz music, playing quietly. Everyone's kind of like, it's like walking into a restaurant that is preparing for a busy service and everyone's wearing their chef's whites and, and I look at the menu and it's like, duck confit salad with strawberries and roasted pheasant breast. And I was just like, you know, for a minute, I was just like, where am I right now? Am I inside of a prison? But I'm about to have literally one of the best meals, you know, of that year at that prison. So, you know, after that experience, I immediately asked, you know, started to negotiate access to bring in cameras to do a documentary about this place and this special guy who's been running it for 40 years. And yeah, we filmed for a year and a half right before COVID. And then the film had its world premiere in New York at Doc NYC, the largest documentary film festival in 2022. And here we are 3 years later and finally bringing it to Chef Hill's home.
Yeah, looking forward to having it here at home. Mark, so you're back, like you say, you're a food critic at Detroit Free Press. And is this the first documentary you've done?
No, I actually have a background in documentary film. This is my first feature-length documentary, but I've done a number of short films, mostly around food, but also some, you know, I worked on some Netflix and HBO things as well around justice. And so this is kind of the unique sort of combination of those two worlds.
Okay. And so you have Chris sitting there next to you. How are you doing, Chris?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Good. Introduce yourself. Tell folks a little bit about your background and why you're sitting here today.
Well, actually, I was a tutor in Chef Hill's program.
Okay.
I was serving a life sentence. I was a juvenile lifer.
Okay. And,
during the course of time serving the life sentence, I was at Lakeland Correctional Facility.
Okay.
And while there, I had the privilege and the opportunity to meet Chef Hill in the in his food tech program.
Okay.
I first was working in the institutional kitchen, and there was a guy named Barry Johnson who was working in the kitchen as well. Actually, he was holding a dual assignment, and it was through Barry that I gained my association to Chef Hill. Mm-hmm. So I would go over to the food tech program, and I would take guys from the institutional kitchen to the food tech program so that they could take the ServSafe program and get their food handler certification. Mm-hmm. After a period of time, Chef Hill gave me the opportunity to become a tutor. Some of the guys who were there previously, such as Dink and
Ernest,
mm-hmm. well, they ended up migrating up out of the program. So some positions opened up. And Chef Hill offered me the opportunity to take the garbage position.
Okay.
And so I held that position as well as tutor.
Yeah. So are these positions highly sought after now?
Oh, these positions are pretty exclusive, to be honest with you.
Okay.
We have a classification director in each institution that sets individuals in whatever programming that their RGNC or their reception and guidance and their recommendations deemed necessary for them.
Okay.
I had a routine work assignment, but you don't have access to every option as far as routine work assignments are concerned. Mm-hmm. Something like a food tech tutor, that's at the higher echelon, you know, because to meet certain security needs just in order to get in at the type of position.
I think it's important to add, though, that, you know, the food that is being served, you know, to the general population, the mess hall, and the food that you interact with at food tech, I mean, it's two different worlds, you know. Yeah. I mean, maybe you can talk about that a little bit, too.
Yeah, it's a stark difference. The culture of culinary in the institutions as far as the institutional kitchen concern has evolved based upon the fact that you had a lot of privatized companies coming in.
Okay. And
task companies came in, they began to lower the standard for food production.
Mm-hmm.
So now it's pretty much nil. You know, it's so low to the point where, you know, you just pretty much add water and that's it. In Chef Hill's program, though, you had an opportunity to work with some ingredients and practice on some techniques that you wouldn't normally utilize in those type of kitchens nowadays.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I want to emphasize that, like, the training in Chef Hill's program is like the training that you would get at a prestigious culinary school outside of prison.
Right.
And that's how it sets it up.
Yeah. And so have we, and I don't want to give anything away on people to see the documentary, but have people who previously incarcerated been in the program, have we followed some? Has it helped them in their careers and futures outside of prison?
Yeah, absolutely. And so the film does sort of trace the journey of three of the individuals that came through the program, one of whom is Dink Dawson. And so Dink was able to, you know, get out with a job lined up already at a high-end hotel restaurant downtown Detroit. You know, for one reason or another, that didn't work out, but instead he was able to spin it and open his own restaurant. And now, you know, the Green Mile Grill. And so this, you know, he got out. Our first day filming with him was October 2018. So we're now past the 7-year mark. Green Mile Grill is still going strong. They've now moved locations. And he's working on a build out. He's actually serving off a food truck right now. Off of Gratiot in Detroit, for anyone who's familiar with Detroit. And but yeah, you know, and the, I think the experience in the program and the mentorship that Chef Hill, you know, continues to offer, I think has been a game changer for Dink.
If we don't want to give away the documentary, we want people to see it, but if you'd say, here are a couple of things I want you to make sure you pay attention to in the documentary, what would you say those couple of those moments are?
Well, I think one of the main issues that we really kind of, you know, this isn't a film that has, first of all, for people who haven't seen it, it's not a film that has like talking heads. It's not people like us sitting there and talking about issues. You're really just, it's a true like verite documentary where we're just following people in their daily lives. And so it feels much more like a narrative film than a traditional sort of like PBS documentary. But through that natural progression of these characters' journeys, we learn things like this issue of overfamiliarity, which is a rule that the Michigan Department of Corrections has for people who are employed in the institutions and then incarcerated institutions. And then they can't, there's all these rules about how they can interact and how they can't interact. And one particular one that really, you know, that came up a lot over and over was with Chef Hill, because so he spends, you know, with somebody like Ernest Davis, he spent 20 years working with this guy because he was in a life sentence. But then the day that he leaves the program, Chef Hill can't actually have any interaction with him until Ernest is completely off of parole. So, you know, the department is sending out folks, and at their most vulnerable moment, when they need their mentor the most, when they're trying to get their lives right and trying to get their lives set up, they can't even call the guy. Because of this overfamiliarity rule. And so that's been a topic that we've brought up over and over, because it is something that we think, you know, and I think we even have seen in the time that this film has been out, the department, you know, being a little bit more, I don't know, correct me if I'm wrong, but being a little bit more, less rigid with those rules, so that, so that they can make sure that they're giving people, you know, the support that they need when they need it.
Well, I tell you, if I can interject a little bit,
please.
I look at even, the criteria that they have for our communication with individuals who have previous convictions. Now that is a little bit more relaxed. So it seems a little bit kind of contrary that you would be able to communicate with individuals who have a previous criminal conviction, but you can't with someone who has been fostering a program such as the Food Tech program that Chef Hill is fostering. And so that definitely is a point of concern and interest for me, you know.
Yeah, I think the other topic that comes up a lot is, you know, Bradley Leonard, who's also one of the folks that we follow throughout the film. You know, he struggled with a substance abuse disorder, and you know, in prison, there's a whole underbelly and a whole world that you know, really makes it even harder for folks who have that type of issue that they're struggling with and working through, and really very little support for somebody like, you know, really Brad should have been in rehab, and instead, you know, our society's answer is to lock him up and punish him when what he really needs is help. And I think that that's something that that's a through line that you can really extend to, you know, most folks who are incarcerated, right? You know,
just
a solution for every social ill that we have, rather than treating the root cause of it, we're just going to, you know, lock folks up and say, all right, this is what we're doing. And so, you know, I think the film doesn't hit you over the head with these things. It's, these are subtle issues that people, you know, deal with in their daily lives. And I think because of the way that we sort of tracked it, we didn't make an advocacy film, even though it does, you know, even though I think our impact campaign has advocated for certain issues. But that sort of balance has allowed us to play places like Coldwater, Michigan, to a very, I would say, conservative crowd, and have them receive the message And yeah, maybe if we plant the seed of like of a seed of doubt of like, you know, they thought that this system was one way their whole lives. Mm-hmm. And then we see these guys' journeys and realize, yes, oh, they're human too.
Yes.
You know, if we can just do that a few times, I feel sure, like, you know, that's we're moving in the right direction.
Gotcha. Gotcha. So what are some of the other places that you've been able to show the documentary?
Oh, everywhere. Yeah, I mean, we've gone from New York to Seattle to to Napa Valley. I mean, really, we've gone to some of the most beautiful places in the country. You know, with this film, and it's been really great too to take. We played in Chicago. The film won a James Beard Award the year that it was released. Which, for folks who don't know, that's like the Oscars of food.
Okay.
Like, you're a chef and you win a James Beard Award, it's like you won an Oscar.
Okay.
And they also have a media arm of the James Beard Awards, and the film did win that in 2023. Mm-hmm. So we've done a few engagements in Chicago. We've played all over the state of Michigan.
Yeah. And what year was it initially released?
It had its world premiere at the end of 2022.
Okay.
And it's been kind of heartening because we've had a much longer festival run and just a kind of a community screening run than most films have. But I think it attests to the power of the film, honestly. I mean, when people see it, you know, it's hard not to be moved by these stories. Yeah.
So as you screened in different places, what are some of the, what are some of the comments you had, but have you had people say things, you know, as the filmmaker, like, I didn't expect to get that comment?
I mean, yeah, there's so many issues that the film brings up. Let me think of something unexpected. You know, one of the things that Chef Hill talks about a lot is just how, he's sometimes treated by maybe other folks in the department or just people who don't understand what he's doing. You know, when he's out in the checkout line and he's got all this lobster. and folks know him, you know, because he's been in Coldwater for 40 years now. So folks know him and say like, oh, you're going to feed those men lobster, you know, those criminals. What are you doing? Mm-hmm. Why are you wasting your money on them? Mm. And it's like, well, what is prison for if not to rehabilitate? Right. Like that is the stated purpose. And how can we rehabilitate folks if we're not giving them skills, if we're not bettering them in some way from when they came into prison? You know, if they're coming in and all you're doing is punishing them,
yeah,
what do you expect to happen when you release them back into society? Chris, I think you can chime in here.
I had an opportunity to see the film, and even having been a part of the production of it, it was surreal for me.
Yes.
Because it brought about the humanistic aspects of individuals in prison. Guys that are serving time, yeah, they've done some things. Mm-hmm. Those things was horrible, you know. But there's still a human side to that story.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not to say that we should try to overly relate to individuals who done committed such crimes.
Sure.
But bringing a humanistic perspective to the story, mm-hmm, gives us an opportunity to release some of our fears.
Okay. You know,
to begin to work with the issues that need to be worked with, because then we realize that these people do have potential for change. Okay. They do have the capacity, you know what I mean, to change their ways.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for many of us coming in, I was 18 years old. I was very immature. There was still a lot that I had to learn about maturity, a lot of things that I hadn't experienced. Mm-hmm. I'm out now and I never had a driver's license. And I just got a driver's license. And so having the opportunity to be around individuals such as Chef Hill gave me almost the license in and of itself, you know, to tap into that humanistic side of it, to experience that there. Excuse me, I'm sorry.
No problem.
Yeah.
There's one remarkable thing about Chef Hill too that I really want to stress is it's like, yeah, he teaches cooking at a very, very high level.
Yes.
But he is also, you know, the father figure, the uncle, the pastor, the role model that a lot of these guys never had growing up. And so his presence in their lives takes on more. And but what's remarkable is he doesn't look at any files of any guys that come to his program. He doesn't know what they did. He doesn't care what they did.
Okay.
He always says, when the judge hit the gavel, that was your punishment. When you're in here, as long as you're about the business of food, you're good. You know what I mean? And there's another line from the film that I just love. And he says, if you treat them like animals, they'll act like animals. Right. Mm-hmm. If you treat them like human beings, they will act like human beings. Mm-hmm. And that sort of like, that perception shift of like, okay, these are human beings here that are spending their lives behind bars. Like maybe we could, if we treat them a little more like human beings, we'll have better outcomes.
But it also sheds light onto the personality of a lot of staff members within the Department of Corrections. Mm. Chef Hill is not the only person who has that compassion, who has that their approach of seeing individuals from an individual standpoint and a humanistic standpoint. And so you do have individuals within the Department of Corrections that do have a heart towards compassion, you know, and they will treat you like a human being, you know. So it does highlight that those type of approaches actually are beneficial in work, you know, and there's more that needs to be done. Mm-hmm. So Bill just has created a program that fostered an environment where individuals could come in and they could be their best self, mm-hmm. you know, best version of who they could be within prison, because you can't fully be, you know, your best version while you're in there. But for mm-hmm. for the 8 hours or the 4 hours that you're up in that program, it's really on you.
Mm-hmm. Leads me to a question. Have you ever been able to screen this film with incarcerated persons?
So we have not had the we've been talking with the MDOC for a while, but I just remembered it actually screened at there was a film festival in San Quentin at the famous San Quentin Penitentiary mm-hmm. in California, and it screened there in October.
Okay.
We were not able to attend. That was specifically for the incarcerated individuals. Mm-hmm. But it, you know, we were sort of given feedback that it went over very well. It was one of the top three features, I guess, out of 60 films. We are still negotiating, navigating, trying to get the Department of Corrections to screen it. And we've gotten some positive feedback. It's just, we haven't actually done it yet. And I think that may be intentional. I don't want to cast aspersions here. I don't know, but you know, yeah. We do hope to screen it at Coldwater though, you know, at Lakeland Correctional
Facility. So after the screening, do you have an opportunity to engage with the audience and answer questions and that kind of thing?
Absolutely. Yeah. Tonight. So yeah, we have the screening tonight at the, I hope I'm not mispronouncing this, but the Frauenthal Center.
Yes. Frauenthal.
Yep. Frauenthal Center at 7 p.m. Coldwater Kitchen. It's $9. Mm-hmm. There's still some tickets available. And afterwards there will be a panel featuring me, Chris, Dink Dawson, Ernest Davis, and Chef Hill himself. And considering Chef is from Muskegon, I think we're going to have a lot of Chef Hill's sort of, you know, friends and family in the audience and the homecoming.
Yeah, that'd be nice. He's a little older than me. Grew up here in Muskegon Heights, so I know him by his nickname around town. What has all this notoriety been like for him? I mean, you know, from how he, you know, his heart and intent of starting this to now, you know, and a little notoriety comes with this.
Well, Chef is the most humble guy you will ever meet. Uh-huh. And if you know chefs like I do, you know that just is that's the opposite of most chefs, right?
Not a common trait. Huh?
This man has no ego. You know, I think it part of the thing is like he is so guided by his faith and his Christianity and mm-hmm. and his soul, you know, that it all just feels like divine timing. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, he is still very quiet and soft-spoken and humble, but, you know, seeing him in places where he's signing, you know, signing autographs of mm-hmm. of his picture. I mean, I feel good because, you know, he's been doing this work for 40 years without asking for, it's his day job. You know what I mean? He hasn't asked for any of this.
Yes.
But it's a testament to show you that like when you believe in people and you do good work that, you know, you will be rewarded. And so I'm just happy that this film has been able, I mean, he was already a celebrated member of the community. Mm-hmm. But the film has really given him his flowers in a way that is, you know, while he's still here and still active, And hopefully he can become, you know, a role model or a figure for the type of person that the department will hire, you know, to replace him and beyond.
You know, I had an opportunity to ask Chef what he thought about that, you know, the notoriety and everything. Because I said to him, I said, you know, when you started this program off, there wasn't no cameras in prison. There wasn't no one there to applaud you. You know, you simply did this out of sincere interest for seeing individuals gain some skills that was going to help them in later days. And if Chef's words would be, I don't know what I did to deserve this.
I don't know how I got here. That's what he always says. I don't know how I got here.
No, that's something. Yeah. Well, hopefully, you know, again, even as you all talk about it, you know, you say it touches on, it wasn't necessarily a film about prison reform or how we treat people incarcerated, but you can't not discuss these issues and imagine the impacts and the influence you hope it has on people. Sure. So, one of the reasons I asked that question about our, you know, if it's been screened for incarcerated persons, but I imagine when you, you know, if you're in a cold water, if that facility, you know about it and you heard about it.
Yeah.
So that I, you know, maybe there, you know, and Christian, there's people like, I don't know if aspire to is the right word, but just like that, another problem is something to get yourself together to shoot for.
Right.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think that it's like, if we screen it for, it's definitely more to change the minds of the people that are outside of the fence. Right.
I got you. Sure.
Not to say that, but like, yeah, it's like if people that are, you know, at Coldwater see it, they'll say, oh yeah, I know about this program. Mm-hmm. I know about this program. And I live this every day.
Yeah.
It's the people that, you know, that hold the purse strings and the power that we're really hoping to push and influence with this film and see the folks that are behind those fences in a different light.
Okay.
It's unfortunate. You do have a lot of people out in society that really don't want to see individuals from a prison perspective being highlighted as someone that can have the potential or capacity to be something better than the criminals that they were convicted as, you know? And I think that's rooted a lot in hurt, you know, a lot in pain that they may have suffered or family members may have suffered.
Yes.
But the stark reality is that, you know, everyone has that their potential. Everyone has that capacity, you know, just what are we going to do in order to cultivate it?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I mean, the American carceral system touches 1 in 3 Americans. We are, you know, to an extent, we are all affected by it. We all pay taxes into the system.
Sure.
And we all support it through that way.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think the film, the power of the film is that it uses food, you know, this thing that we all do, that we all like to see and eat, as this kind of Trojan horse to, you know, to talk about deeper, more important issues and hopefully change some hearts and minds in the process.
Mm-hmm. So after Muskegon, Fronthaw Theater, where are you going next?
That's a good question. We're actually working on a big symposium in the spring in Detroit. That'll be, you know, it'll be bigger than just a film screening. We're going to convene, you know, all these different people from around the country who work at the intersection of food and justice. And you'd be surprised by how many there are. I mean, there's quite a few. Food has this incredible power to change lives. And so that's really the next big, I'm sure we'll have other screening. You know, we do a lot of community screens. We'll have other screenings between now and then, but that's the next big sort of tent pole for the campaign, for the film that we're working on.
Yeah. Mark, Chris, we got about a minute left. Anything I would ask you guys, you want to make sure that we get out and say, one, to encourage people to come see the film, and two, just in general about this whole experience you've had with Coldwater Kitchen.
I'll let you go first.
And I think seeing this film will help individuals to see a more realistic side of what individuals in prison experience. There was no punches that was held, you know. Everything that was filmed was exactly how it occurred. You saw the good and you saw the bad.
Mm-hmm. You know?
and just approaching it from that realistic and genuine standpoint gives you a more calmness, you know, I think, in yourself about what to expect from individuals in prison.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I will say, you know, this is, you know, if you're in Muskegon, this may be one of your only opportunities to see the film. Mm-hmm. So because you can't, it's not distributed yet. We're working with PBS, but that's been a long time coming. And so this may be your only chance to see the film tonight. So come out to the Frauenthal Center. That's what we want to do, is get people there.
All right. All right. And I don't know how much you guys know about Muskegon Heights, but maybe Chef Hill mentions where he's from every once in a while, but the community is very proud of him. And, you know, we just I'm hoping that people come out and support him, support the film and the message, you know, that's in there and one of our native sons being highlighted. I want to thank you guys so much for joining us, Mark, for however you got motivated to do this and how this story drew you to want to put it on film. I thank you.
No, thank you.
Appreciate it.
Thank you for highlighting
Chris, it. So glad to have you on the program. You know, we probably do another hour on your story, but the finished product or the product that's being developed here, I'm glad to have the opportunity to meet you, and I wish you continued success. All right.
Thank you so much.
It's
a pleasure being here.
All right. Y'all take care. Enjoy your holidays, and hopefully, folks, we'll see you tonight.
Yes.
Yes, sir. Thank you so much. Take care.
All right. Folks, this has been Community Focus. Man, I love doing this program. Days like today, we talk about health in our community. Get to hear one of our native sons and just this amazing work he's doing at Cold Water Kitchen and how it's affecting people. And we get to go inside and maybe see and learn some things we don't know, or maybe we think we know. So I'm always honored that the folks here at 103.7 allow me to be part of this family, that I get to interview people and present information to my community. I hope that you all are as blessed by this as I am. We're in the holiday season. Listen, even though it's 13 days till Christmas, every day is a good day to go out and do some good. Be a blessing to other people. My brother Gregory T, get well. Thanks to all the folks here at 103.7 to beat to make me look good and sound halfway decent. You guys be blessed. We'll see you next Friday.